Good evening, everyone. For those of you who weren't here this morning, for those of you who lost consciousness sometime this morning, and for those who may have sustained serious injury through some of the activities this afternoon, perchance a bad tackle from Brother Andrew Breyer, well, I feel that I owe all of you an explanation and a summary of where we got to before we laid Ecclesiastes down at lunchtime. So I'm going to attempt to summarise all that we said in 2 hours this morning in 2 minutes this evening. The first thing we did this morning was to get acquainted with where the book of Ecclesiastes was and who wrote it. Now we observed that we couldn't be sure who wrote Ecclesiastes. We knew his pen name, Koheleth, the preacher. And although some of us would like to think it was Solomon who wrote Ecclesiastes, we agreed that we could not be sure about that. What we could be sure of was this, that whoever wrote Ecclesiastes, if it wasn't Solomon, then it was a super Solomon. It was a man or a woman who claimed his wisdom and who claimed his wealth as well. And so we watched and observed as this person went and used the wisdom and wealth to answer the question of all time. For all that I put into life, what do I get back? And if you remember, well, we got two answers. It all depended on how we looked at life. If we decided that God was in our lives, well, then we got an answer back which said that we were to enjoy life as a gift from God. If, on the other hand, we took it that God was no part of our lives, that God is not, well, then we got back a very different answer. Do you remember what that answer was? One word summed it all up. Hebel. What was the English word for Hebel? Any of the youth weekenders tell me? Yes. Vanity. Absolutely. And so we saw a difference between having God in the equation and having him out of the equation. With him in, life had meaning and purpose, and life was joyful. Then we went on to look at that truth, that God in our lives brings joy, and see it in, well, in the context of a plan. Do you remember 28 times for doing things, Ecclesiastes 3? And we observed that God has a plan that catches all that life is, and it's not just a game to him. God has a plan which is leading to his kingdom. Now, we can choose to ignore God's plan, but that does not mean that God's plan isn't, and it does not mean that God's plan doesn't catch us. And that's pretty much where we got for the end of session two this morning. Now, actually, that's only got us to Ecclesiastes 3, verse 10. Ecclesiastes has got 12 chapters, so what on earth, you may be thinking, is in the other 9 chapters? Well, that's what we're to do with this evening. Just have a look with me first, if you will, back at where we, well, the conclusion which we reached, if God is. That's at the end of Ecclesiastes chapter 2. And let's just remind ourselves of what Koheleth tells us, if God is. Now I'm going to use the corrections that we noted over the AV. So you may see slight differences if you're reading in the Authorised Version. Ecclesiastes 2 verse 24 goes like this. There is no good in man that he should eat and drink and that he should make his soul enjoy good in his labour. This also I saw that it was from the hand of God. For who can eat or who can have enjoyment without him? Now, I failed to mention when we were here last time that this verse, these verses, mark the end of a section of Ecclesiastes. Actually, I failed to mention anything about a section at all because you weren't ready for it. Your consciousness was increasing and increasing, but if you're like me, you should be at the absolute pinnacle of your intelligence this time of the day, just around tea time. And after, I must admit, by 8 o'clock, mine's all gone. But let's see how yours is doing. See, there is a structure. I'm not going to claim this for myself. You should never steal other people's ideas. If anybody fancies buying a book that helps them with Ecclesiastes, this is the one for me. Of all the books I read preparing for this weekend, that one made the most sense. If anybody needs the references, come and see me afterwards. In that book, the writer puts before us a suggested structure for Ecclesiastes. And you can see that, well, we got down to the midway part of section 2 this morning. We dealt with enjoying life as God's gift. We dealt with him having a plan that catches everything. What we haven't dealt with yet, well, is explaining God's plan when we look around ourselves in the world and deciding how we should react to God's plan. And that, in essence, is what Solomon deals with in the last 9 chapters of Ecclesiastes. I gave myself away then, didn't I? I said Solomon. Coeleth. Let's not be influencing anybody. Of course, it isn't quite that simple. Solomon, this is going to be difficult. Coeleth, as he goes through, reaches a series of conclusions. And I'll show you those conclusions. For speed, it's easier to put them on the screen. As he builds his discussion and as he tests life, these are the conclusions that he reaches. Now, there is a code in there, a sequence of words by which we know he's just reached a conclusion. There we are, I'm going to test you now. How alert are you? Did you eat far too much tea or did you not? There is a phrase in all 3 of those verses on the screen which is code for conclusion. I've just reached one. Can anybody see the phrase that repeats in all 3 of those verses? I fear. No, there is a phrase by which we know. It has to do with food. I'll give it to you. Every time Coeleth reaches a conclusion, the end of a section, he tells us, eat, drink, make your soul enjoy good in all your labour. And that is the underlying conclusion of Coeleth as he looks at life. It's actually a little bit more detailed than that. His conclusion builds as he goes through the different sections. And you can see that we've dealt with a lot of those now. In the section 1, we saw that without God, we cannot be satisfied. We saw that God gives us wisdom, joy, to the good, to the sinner, he gives travail. The other conclusions, life isn't dreary when lived to God's plan. Enjoyment, not accumulation, is the key. That's something we're going to look at this evening. We have to learn to enjoy, not to worry. Justice and judgment might be delayed, but they are inevitable. God will judge, he tells us. God's gift of enjoyment is to be preferred above all. Now, why do I tell you all of this? Just have a look again at verse 26 of Ecclesiastes 2. Look at it closely. For God giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom and knowledge and joy. But to the sinner he giveth travail to gather and to heap up, that he may to give to him that is good before God. Now the critical question is this. Is what Coeleth observes there what you see in life around you? Let me put it a different way. When you walk into your meeting room, do you see only wise people who are joyful? People who have no pain in their lives, no suffering, no loneliness, no trouble. Is that how your meeting is when you go back home? Well, if it is, maybe you should look a bit closer, I have to say. Mine isn't, for sure. I'll put it a different way. When you go into school or into work on a Monday after a weekend and you discuss with people what you've done, do those people who have no faith at all, do they say to you, oh, the travail of it all, it was a terrible weekend, everything I had was taken? Because Coeleth has just said in his conclusion that that's the way it should be. God giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom, knowledge, joy. To the sinner, he gives travail. Well, I have to say, that isn't how my life is. When I look around life, things are very different. Very often, the person who has no faith seems to be doing the best. The person who has some faith and is trying to follow God seems to be hit time and time again. See, the key thing about Ecclesiastes chapter 4 through to 12 is this. That Coeleth doesn't just tell us what life's about and then say, listen, stupid, I know it all, don't bother dealing with me, don't question me, just accept it. What he does instead is he tests, he holds our hand and says, okay, this is my answer. With God in your life, life makes sense, it's joyful. And if you don't believe me, I will hold your hand and I will walk you through all the things you see in life around you, and let's look at them to see if the plan works. But put another way, Coalette does not do to us what I do to my 7-year-old daughter. My 7-year-old daughter, who you will meet tomorrow, is in that stage where she asks questions. Oh, questions, questions, questions. Dad, why can I only play with my Nintendo DS for an hour a day? Because. Dad, why do I have to stay in bed till 5:30 every morning? Because. Dad, why does the cat bite my hand if I pull its leg so hard? Because. Coalette does not. Because us. He doesn't say, listen, stupid, this is it, deal with it. He walks us through, well, through things in life that we might, well, observe and say, that doesn't match what Coalette has just told me. And that's what we're going to do for the rest of this evening together. We're going to take two of life's difficulties and see how Coalette addresses them in terms of all that he has told us, that life makes sense if God is, that we can be part of God's plan heading for the kingdom. Now, I'll tell you what those two difficulties are. They are riches. Remember? Money, what it's all about, Ecclesiastes. Riches and suffering. And I suspect that of all the issues in life, when you look at the wealthy and how they're living their lives and what they're getting away with, and if you look at the suffering and who's doing the suffering and whether it's fair, you may find there two areas of life where, well, to start with, you may say, Coalette's got it wrong. It isn't this simple. God isn't with those who follow him. God doesn't take from those who ignore him. So let's look first at how Coalette deals with what it's like to be rich. How do the rich fit into God's plan? Where do they fit into his plan? Have a look with me first, if you will, at Ecclesiastes 5 and verse 18. Now, for the alert amongst you, you will notice that we're just instantly now zooming to conclusion 2, the start of it. Ecclesiastes 5, verse 18. Behold, that which I have seen, it is good and comely for one to eat and to drink and to enjoy the good of all his labour. There we go. Conclusion time, that he taketh under the sun, all the days of his life which God giveth him, for it is his portion. Fit into the plan, Coalette is telling us. This is what God is asking you to do. Verse 19, every man also to whom God hath given riches and wealth, and hath given him power to eat thereof, and to take his portion, and to rejoice in his labour, this is the gift of God. For he shall not much remember the days of his life, because God answereth him in the joy of his heart. Now, that's interesting. You see, let me put on the screen conclusion 1. Do you remember what conclusion 1 was? God gives to the good wisdom, knowledge, and joy, and he takes from the evil and gives to the good. And very much the same thing is coming out here now in verse 19. Every man also to whom God hath given riches and wealth, hath given him power to eat thereof, and to take his portion, to rejoice in his labour, this is the gift of God. Now, of course, if you apply logic, what that would mean is this, that when we look around us, the people in life who believe in God, who accept their part in his plan, should be, oh, the wealthy ones. Because God doesn't just give the ability to joy, he actually gives riches as well. Did you notice that? Every man also to whom God has given riches. Everything that we have in life, whether we are in God's plan or not, is from God. God gives. God has made every wealthy person wealthy. Of course, that doesn't tend to work, does it? If you look around you in the world, it isn't, well, all the people who have faith, the people who are trying to follow God, they're not, by and large, the wealthy, the super rich. there's a real sprinkling. You have some very poor people. You have some very wealthy people. And Koheleth spends a lot of time testing and establishing this issue. In theory, God will reward those who look for him with wealth and the ability to enjoy. But does it work in practice? He asks. Well, let's have a think about that for a moment. We spoke a lot this morning about what we wanted out of life, where we wanted to be, what we were hoping for. So let me ask the youth weekenders this. Have you thought about what you want from life? Let's see, let's test it. Has anybody in the room thought about what they want from life and decided that they want to be miserable and poor? Anybody? Any miserable, poor people? Yes? No? Right, okay. Well, I said the youth weekenders. We know. Well, let's ask again then. Has anybody considered what they want from life and decided they want to be stinking rich so that they can rerun all of Koheleth's experiments? A couple of twitches there, but I'll give you the benefit of the doubt. Let's ask a more general question. Have any of you actually thought what your position is going to be as you go through your life to money, to wealth? It doesn't surprise me if you haven't, but you see, it's a most important question. You ever thought that your attitude to money will define who you are? It will define what you wish for. It will define how you work. It will define all sorts of things that you say to people and that you think of people. And you have a lot of options in terms of how you might treat money in your life. Koheleth put some of them before us. Let's have a quick look at them. Ecclesiastes 4. Have a look at verse 7. I wonder, will you be like this when it comes to wealth and money? Ecclesiastes 4, verse 7. Then I returned and I saw vanity under the sun. There is one alone, and there is not a second. Yea, he hath neither child nor brother. Yet is there no end of all his labour, neither is his eye satisfied with riches, neither saith he, for whom do I labour, and bereave my soul of good? This also is vanity, yea, it is a sore travail, says Koheleth. So what sort of person is he talking of there? Ah, well, he's talking, isn't he, of a person who is on his own, beginning of verse 8. There is one alone, there is not a second. And he's talking of a person who spends their life work, work, working, and never enjoying that which they have accrued. In actual fact, that's interesting. You see, my employer would like me to be like that, I think. They want me to work, 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 and never have any holidays. It's interesting. I'm in, I guess you'd say, middle management. The tier above me are the directors. And if you go into the directors' boardroom or their canteen, the conversation that is there more than any other is, how's the divorce going? Really? So almost as if you have to be divorced to be a director in our company. I'm guessing it's because that tier of management is full of the people that Koheleth observe here. People who are focused on work, 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 progressing it, and never have time to enjoy it. And so a consequence is that they lose their family life. I have to say, if that's what it takes to be a director, I think I'll stay with my wife. Because it doesn't look very much fun to me. But companies will hope you will be that sort of person. Of course, we did reflect a little bit, didn't we, this morning on money and whether it will actually, well, whether it will fulfill us. Remember, I was telling you about me. All I wanted was a pretty wife and a car that didn't break down every day. Well, it's not just me, you know, who is never quite satisfied. Koheleth tells us that it is everyone. Have a look at Ecclesiastes 5, verse 10. And remember this when you think about your attitude to money and wealth. Ecclesiastes 5, verse 10. One of the wealthiest men who ever walked God's earth says this: he that loveth silver shall not be satisfied with silver, nor he that loveth abundance with increase. This also is vanity. When goods increase, they are increased that eat them. you remember how many people we thought Solomon may have been feeding on a daily basis? Anybody remember? There's a test of consciousness. Anybody remember? 40,000. 40,000. See, a conscious man at the back is always a good sign. 40,000 people. Well, if this was Solomon, you can imagine him, can't you, reflecting on that many open mouths. When goods increase, they're increased that eat them. What good is there to the owners thereof, having beholding of them with their eyes? And it is to be remembered then that wealth will not satisfy the void that God puts in us, the void that only he can fill. Of course, that's only one attitude to money. Let me come and show you another one. Have a look, if you will, at Ecclesiastes 5, verse 13. There is a sore evil which I have seen under the sun, namely riches kept for the owners thereof to their hurt. But those riches perish by evil travel, and he begetteth a son, and there is nothing in his hand. Now, so what's he talking about now? We've dealt with the man who works, 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 and never enjoys. Now we're dealing with the person that saves, 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 and loses the lot. Will you be a saver? Of course, there's another man in Scripture who saved, 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 and lost the lot. Do you remember him? Just come and have a look at Luke chapter 12 for a moment. So this is a very common type of person. The truth be known, I think the government of the United Kingdom would love us all to be this sort of person, to save, 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 because, well, there won't be a pension, not by the time we get there. Maybe by the time Andrew gets there, but not us. Just making sure he's awake. Luke chapter 12, verse 16. Jesus spake a parable unto them, saying, the ground of a certain rich man brought forth plentifully. Now, do you remember which man we're talking about here? This is the rich fool, isn't it? Interesting, that rich fool. Here was a man who had a great year, bumper year, harvest, well, coming out of his ears. Realised he hadn't got anywhere to store, to save, save, save. So he went and built barns. Now, interestingly, he isn't called a rich fool when we first are introduced to him. So don't get me wrong here. His foolishness was not that he was wealthy. It was not that he had a brilliant year. God gave him that brilliant year. His foolishness is in how he treats that which he has. Verse 17. The rich man thought within himself, saying, what shall I do? Because I have no room where to bestow my fruit. He said, this will I do, I will pull down my barns and build greater. There will I bestow all my fruits and my goods. I will say to my soul, soul, thou hast much goods laid up for many years. Take thine ease, eat, drink, and be merry. Do you notice a bit of a theme coming out there? Six times he tells us about himself. I will do this, I will do that. He tells us of my fruits, my barns, my goods, my soul. And of course, it's only after he's made that mistake that he becomes the fool. Verse 20, Luke chapter 12, God said to him, thou fool, this night thy soul shall be required of thee. Then who shall those things be which thou hast provided? Jesus carries on, so is he that layeth up treasure for himself and is not rich towards God. You see, it is perfectly possible in this life to save, 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 when God actually wants us to give, give, give. God resources each one of us. Some of us he's resourced already. Some of you he is going to resource in the next 5, 10, 15 years. And do you know what? God doesn't just give you things and turn away. He watches you. He watches, interested to know what you will do with that which he gave you. And that's a choice that each one of us has to make then. Do we view the things that we have in this life as ours for saving? Or do we view the things that God gives us as his for using? And that, in essence, is the wisdom that Koheleth arrives at in Ecclesiastes. See, will you follow his advice? Come with me back to Ecclesiastes 6. Well, I've just realised I put it on the screen. I must be going soft on you. This is what we have. The reason is I've got it in the NIV. I've seen another evil under the sun, and it weighs heavy upon me. God gives a man wealth, possessions, honour, so that he lacks nothing his heart desires, but God does not enable him to enjoy them. You see there that he restates for us the truth that enjoyment comes from God. There are people in the world with oodles of cash, bags of money. They can't enjoy them. Remember, we thought of some of those people, didn't we? Some of the pop stars of today. You've got it all. I've got nothing. Koheleth's way, well, he puts it before us in verse 7, 8 and 9 of chapter 6. All men's efforts are for his mouth, he reminds us, yet his appetite is never satisfied. In other words, don't go looking in this life for wealth that will satisfy, because you won't find it. Always somewhere there will be wanting of more. Verse 8, it doesn't matter if you're rich or you're poor or you're wise or you're foolish, it's the same for all of us. Verse 9, better to accept that which is in front of our nose than spend our lives wanting that which God hasn't given us. See, there is a key observation that Koheleth makes here. And it's important that we don't fall into that mistake. It's this. What Koheleth has been testing in all of this is the premise that if you see a rich man or a rich woman, you think they're happy. That's not necessarily the case. And when we look around ourselves in the world and see some pretty rotten people with some fantastic lifestyles, that's what Koheleth's wisdom is telling us. Don't be fooled by outward observances. In this case, the wealthy are not necessarily the happy. Whereas his way, Koheleth's, well, we've read that already. Ecclesiastes 5, verse 18. Perhaps it'll make a little bit more sense to us now we've looked at the background. Behold, that which I have seen, it is good and comely for one to eat and to drink and to enjoy the good of all his labour. If you're marking your Bible or making notes, there's a nice one for you. Notice that word comely. That word only comes twice in Ecclesiastes. The other time, it's beautiful. Anybody remember a beautiful from this morning? We're not talking about me now. Remember, he hath made everything beautiful in his time. God's plan. God's plan is being revisited here. It is good and beautiful for one to eat and to drink, to enjoy the good of all his labour that he taketh under the sun, all the days of his life which God hath given him, for it is his portion. It's part of God's plan to accept that which he gives us and to enjoy it, to rejoice in it. Verse 19, every man also to whom God hath given riches and wealth and hath given him power to eat thereof, to take his portion, to rejoice in his labour, this is the gift of God. If our attitude to wealth is that we have what God has given us, and God asks us to get on with that and to enjoy it as best we can, well, Koheleth is saying we won't go far wrong. In fact, he says more than that, verse 20, for he shall not much remember the days of his life, because God answers him in the joy of his heart. If you want a paraphrase of that verse, I'll give you one. What he says is this, in return for us accepting what God gives us in our lives, our days will pass swiftly, but not because our days are meaningless and short, as if God is not, but rather because we are absorbed in learning of the plan that God has put before us and asked us to accept in his life. And that, in essence, is the wisdom of Solomon in terms of wealth. Don't want what you can't get. Don't want what God hasn't given you. Don't think that if you have a little bit more, it'll all be all right and things will be satisfying. Remember the void that God has placed in each one of us that only he can satisfy. And then life takes on a much different perspective. So that was the first problem. Let's give ourselves an oxygen break check that the organist is awake, which is always another key sign in all of these things. Excellent. Hymn 163.